Scott Hughes, Rick Horton.
This is a season like no other.
Unbelievable start from Hamilton.
He's just insane.
Oh, they touched! Verstappen is into the lead!
Come on!
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there, we are back. My name's Scott Hughes.
My name's Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds ahead of the Formula One Grand Prix this weekend in Miami, the first Grand Prix in Miami. One of the things I've been looking at this week that's been making me literally laugh out loud is people doing memes of the fake water. Yeah. And people having memes of Danny Ricciardo falling into the water that isn't water and so on and so forth. The thing is with it, I'm a bit mixed on that because it feels very pointless, but at the same time, I suppose it gives you an image, doesn't it? So it's, you know, because some of these tracks all look the same. So at least you'll be able to look at it and go, oh, they're in Miami. Because he's got that fake marina. So at least you'll know. But yeah, it's a strange idea, isn't it? I thought they'd at least put some real water in there.
What I love about it is basically that, so the Miami circuit is basically just on a car park. So, you know, they've tried to make it look nice. But if you actually look at that marina bit with the false water, the boats they've dropped in are like from the 1960s. It's like, you know, there's a Vietnam gunboat in there. It's not exactly, you know, what you normally see around a Formula One track like a Monaco, you know, like, you know, billion pounds worth of yachts. They've just dropped in a couple of pleasure cruisers.
I love the one as well. Have you seen the one with Gunter next to his little wooden boat?
Yeah.
Someone's put that one in there as well. It's just brilliant.
Who says Formula One fans don't have a sense of humour?
I love it.
Most of them don't. Brand new circuit. I've been looking at the track map, actually, and most of the drivers this week have said that on the simulator, they've really enjoyed the track. So it's got a very sort of twisty, little twisty bit towards the back of the circuit, and then a very long back straight before it becomes sort of more sweeping to the first part of the circuit. So I think it's a circuit that's going to give us some overtaking opportunity, especially at the end of that long back straight. But there's also some other areas that might prove interesting. And the thing for me heading into this race, which kind of blew me away a bit, you know, we've been talking about the Ferraris being so dominant in the first part of the season. It turns out that Charles Leclerc and Carlos Sainz were running their engines in limp mode for a lot of the time during the last race. And this is because they're a bit worried about if they turn the engines up to their full potential, they're a bit worried about reliability. And they wanted a couple of races to sort of try and figure that out. And now they reckon they have. They say they're going to turn the engines up for Miami, which is going to make them even more of a threat.
Yeah, so far this season, the Red Bull and the Ferrari are so evenly matched, but the Red Bull has just struggled a lot with reliability, hasn't it? Where the Ferrari so far has been bulletproof. It's fascinating to see two teams that are so level pegging, because you'll go to a circuit where you think, oh, the Red Bulls are going to dominate this, or the Ferraris are going to dominate this, and it's the other way round, or they're so evenly matched. And, you know, good to see Perez, for example, right up there. Carlos seems to be really struggling this year. I saw some comments saying that he might be struggling because he's never had a front-running car, which is it. I kind of understand that to an extent of pressure-wise. He's obviously thinking, you know, wow, I've got a car that can win now, not only races, but can win the championship, and now I need to be up there. So that pressure immediately kind of affects your brain, doesn't it, and slows you down. But, you know, it's just good to see two teams that are so evenly matched. And, you know, the Mercedes has just been nowhere this year, has it? But again, fascinating that George Russell has literally outdriven Hamilton at every single race. I think Hamilton's really struggling. It just goes to show that certain drivers can get something out of a car that other drivers can't. I think Hamilton's just so used to having the best car on the grid. He just can't get his head around this new Mercedes, can he?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, a lot of people have written Hamilton off, and I don't think you can ever do that. But it's clear that George Russell is used to driving a car that's got its struggles and its issues, because we saw him pull some damn fine results out of that Williams over the last couple of years. So he's gone to Mercedes, and it must be disappointing for him thinking, well, I'm going to drive the best car. And then this year, of course, it isn't the best car at the moment. But I think he's probably adapting to the issues that car has better than Hamilton. Hamilton, you know, the whole team is set up around him. So for the last, 8 years, he's had a car that's been built around him, built to his driving style, and now suddenly they've got the issues with the porpoising and all of this, and I think Hamilton's really struggling to adapt to that. And similar thing with Carlos Sainz, I think. He says that when the Ferrari comes more predictable, he'll be able to drive it better, and that would suggest that even the Ferrari, as fast as it is, still has some issues. And we've seen that porpoising all over the place recently. And at Imola, it was bouncing up and down all over the place. So, you know, the teams have still got issues. I think if you looked at the front-running teams now, you'd have to say Red Bull is the one that looks the easiest to drive, if that makes any sense. And if they can sort out the reliability problems, which of course they did in Imola, then they could be really challenging for Constructors and Drivers' Championship again this year.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating as well that a lot of the drivers are saying they're getting injuries from this porpoising. I think George Russell is a great example where he's literally getting headaches and he's getting back pain and rib pain and stuff just from how violent these cars are moving around, which, again, is incredible, isn't it? You know, they've obviously got a lot of work to do. All the teams are suffering from it. The Ferrari has had some unbelievable porpoising, but for some reason they've just managed to kind of harness it, haven't they? And they've carried on and they're doing all right, the Ferrari, compared to the Mercedes. But yeah, a fascinating season. Like you say, the Red Bull looking really good now. If they can get the reliability, then, you know, the second half of this season, they'll do really well. But I think this is the beauty of this season, because I can see Ferrari having a few issues. I mean, they, obviously the last race they did, but I think they'll have a few issues either with crashes or not finishing the race or a few reliability issues down the line. And when that comes into play, Red Bull will be back in it and then it will be very equal and level pegging. So another really exciting season I think we've got ahead of us.
Charles Leclerc, who made the mistake in the closing stages of Imola, which threw away the chance to finish that race in second place and score even more points. That, to me, was a bit reminiscent of the Charles Leclerc we saw when he first went to Ferrari, who was a little bit green, would you say, who made the odd mistake. You remember that qualifying run in Azerbaijan where he was almost certainly going to put it on pole and he stuffed it into the wall. You know, sometimes just tries too hard, almost overdrives the car.
Yeah, and I think we saw this with Verstappen as well, didn't we, where, you know, the first few years they were very gung-ho and very kind of, like you say, overdriving. And both of those drivers have sort of settled in a little bit, calmed down a little bit and kind of mentally fit into the car and fit into driving the car better. But we, yeah, like you say, we've seen it from both of them. I think Charles this year so far has been driving absolutely brilliantly. You know, there's going to be the odd mistake or two. But to see two drivers at that age, you know, they're both, what, 23, 24, somewhere around there. You know, Hamilton, you expect less mistakes because of the age he is and how long he's been doing it. But these guys are still so young, so to see them driving at the level they're at already is just it's just brilliant, I think.
Be interesting to see what sort of upgrade parts that the teams bring to the Miami race weekend. Mercedes really haven't upgraded that car at all, which suggests that there's no point in bringing upgrade parts until they understand why it's not working for them, which must be a worry because the Mercedes of old, because they've got so many employees, they just sort of go away, scratch their heads and get it fixed or manufacture a whole bunch of parts that would sort the problem out. But I'm thinking because they didn't bring any major upgrades to Imola last time out, I'm thinking if they don't bring any to Miami, then that suggests they really can't get their head around this issue.
Yeah, and I think it's been a strange season so far, isn't it? Because we kind of had the flyaway races, and traditionally we've had one or two flyaway races, then we come to Europe and get the European season started, and then there's a big run of European races. This season we've kind of flown away, come back to Europe, then we're going back to Miami and having another flyaway race. Then we've got another couple. We've got Spain and Monaco and Azerbaijan, the next three after this. So we are kind of having a little bit of a European run after this race. But I think it's been harder for the teams to work out where to bring the upgrades, you know, to what races and what they can do. And with regards to Mercedes, I think they're genuinely still struggling to work out what they can do. You know, they're probably trying everything. They're in the simulator and they're trying different parts on the car, but they are really struggling to understand how they can kind of lessen this porpoising, I guess. And that's what's causing most of their issues. So it just, you know, and just hearing Hamilton with his comments saying that the car's very snappy and, you know, you just can't predict what it's going to do next. And you think you know what it's going to do and then it does something different. I mean, that's not great for a driver to be in that position. And, you know, even the radio calls I found really fascinating this year with Toto kind of, you know, speaking to Hamilton on the radio saying, you know, I'm sorry, yeah, this is the team, you know, this is not the car we deserve to give you. It's not the car you deserve to be driving. That's very telling, I think. I mean, I think that's a mental game on Toto's part where he's almost blaming the team so that Hamilton doesn't blame himself and doesn't lose any confidence. But that's, you know, that's something we've never seen. You know, Toto's never had to have those conversations with Hamilton before. And does Hamilton need those conversations? Is it, you know, is he a bit needy in that sense that he needs to be told it's not his fault and to kind of keep his confidence up? It's just fascinating.
I get the impression with Hamilton, and none of us know what's inside his head, but I get the impression with Hamilton that he's when things are going well, he can remain focused and controlled. When things aren't going quite so well, it's when his mind starts to drift. Do you remember the period where he broke up with Nicole Scherzinger, and there was a season which he was constantly looking mean, moody, down and depressed, and was very rarely positive about anything on the team radio during that particular season. This time round, I think he is trying to, he's sure shrugging his shoulders and going, well, you know, it is what it is. There's not much I can do about it at the moment. The team will work hard and we'll sort it out. So he's a bit more positive than he may have been in the past. But I think when things are not going well, I think his head goes down, and it's understandable. I mean, he's been so successful. He's always had a brilliant car to drive underneath him. You know, although I did see that he was talking about the McLaren that he had in 2009, was it, when he had a McLaren that was a bit of a car to forget. He said that that was much worse than his current Mercedes is now, so he's sort of harking back to memories of driving at a different team. Yeah, I don't know. It's just, George Russell seems to come across really maturely. And if you look, you know, George is fourth in the standings on 49 points. Hamilton in seventh on 28 points. He had the podium in the first race of Bahrain, but since then it's been lackluster, hasn't it? And the problem, I suppose, is heading towards Miami is Miami, they've got no real-time data because it's a brand-new circuit, so they can put all their simulation testing and stuff in to try and work out how it's going to be and how they're going to set these cars up. But practice is going to be one of the most important ones of the year because it's a circuit no one's driven on before.
Yeah, and I think what you said earlier about, you know, George Russell has driven for the Williams and he's used to having to get the best out of not the best car. You know, a lot of people say, well, what's the point when you've got this superstar driver? Like, you know, obviously he was under the Mercedes banner for years and they were like, why didn't they bring him up to the team quicker and replace Bottas quicker? But I think this is a great example of why they don't do that, because he's a young guy, got plenty of time ahead of him. And, you know, driving that Williams gave him a lot of kind of data, I suppose, mental data of how to get the best out of not the best car. So the idea being when he does get in one of the better cars, you know, he's unbelievable. And he's proven that now because, like you said, he's driving it better than Hamilton. Hamilton is not got that mental data. Hamilton has not really had a bad car for about 13 odd years. Like you say, if you go back to that 2009 McLaren, you know, since then, a couple of the early Mercedes weren't great, were they? But from kind of 2014 onwards, he's had the best car on the grid. So, you know, he's closing in on 10 years of the best car on the grid. So he's just not had to get his head around a bad car for so long, whereas George Russell has. You know, and he's obviously picked up skills of, right, if I drive it like this, it will help. If I do this with the car, this will help that. And, you know, so he knows a lot of the stuff that will kind of get him out of that. And that's showing. What's fascinating to me is how Hamilton and George Russell would have been had they had the best car this year. Would George Russell be out driving him in the best car, or is it just because it's not the best car that he's looking better than Hamilton at the moment?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing, and I do think it's because George Russell has been in inferior cars for his Formula One career thus far and just has to adapt his driving style to each situation. It's a bit like the karting thing that we've always talked about. You know, if you go to a karting circuit near you and you pay for two races or whatever, almost certainly you'll be in a different kart for your second race. So no matter how used to the first kart you get to, when you're into the second, you have to instantly adapt your driving style just because there's a little nuance of the way it brakes or the way it handles or the way it accelerates. It's the same scaled up, isn't it? And some drivers adapt better than others. And I think, like we said, Hamilton's been so used to having a car that completely suits his driving style underneath him that when he gets one that isn't, maybe it takes him a little bit longer to adapt than the likes of George Russell, who's had to struggle with bad cars for his entire Formula One career up till now.
Lots of the drivers look very happy to be in Miami. I think a lot of the drivers are very excited about the new Vegas race, but yeah, lots of them are kind of going to see basketball games. I saw Lando playing golf with a few of his American celeb friends yesterday, I think it was. A lot later, the race our time. So we've got practice one on Friday, 7:30 to 8:30. Practice two is 10:30 to 11:30 our time. Practice three, Saturday, is 6 till 7 p.m. Qualifying starts at 9 p.m. our time, 9 till 10. And then the race itself on Sunday doesn't start till 8:30 our time.
Yes, and also the support race this weekend is the W Series, the Women's Series, which makes its debut in Miami, and it's the season opener for them. They qualify on the Saturday, 2 p.m. UK time, and they race on Saturday at 7:10, and then a second race on Sunday at 3:20 in the afternoon. We're going to get some pre-Miami stats now from Nicky, our stats man from At Lights Out. He's been analysing all of his graphs ahead of this weekend's race.
As Miami becomes the 11th different destination to host an F1 race in the USA, Verstappen could equal Prost's tally of podiums with a single team, and Sainz could achieve an unenviable record. Here are the top statistics ahead of the 2022 Miami Grand Prix weekend. This weekend's inaugural Miami Grand Prix will be the first time F1 has raced in the state of Florida since the 1959 United States Grand Prix, which took place at Sebring International Raceway. In total, it will be the 72nd World Championship race to take place in the United States. With the US Grand Prix set to take place at COTA later this year, 2022 will be the first Formula One season to feature two races in the United States since 1984, when the sport raced in both Detroit and Dallas. Next up, it's Grand Slam season in Formula One. Charles Leclerc and Max Verstappen have recorded Grand Slams in each of the last two races, marking the first time in F1 history that different drivers have achieved the feat at successive events. If any driver were to take pole, set the fastest lap, lead every lap, and win the race, this would be the first time that a Grand Slam has been recorded at three consecutive races. Meanwhile, if Verstappen records a Grand Slam in Miami, it would be the fourth time that a single driver has recorded Grand Slams at successive events. The other drivers to have done so are Alberto Ascari, Jim Clark, and Sebastian Vettel. Talking of Verstappen, a podium finish for Max Verstappen would see him overtake David Coulthard for 10th in the all-time list of most Formula One podium finishes. A top three result would also see Verstappen equal Alain Prost for 4th in the list of most podiums with a single team. Prost took 63 podiums with McLaren during his career, while Verstappen has taken 62 so far with Red Bull. Carlos Sainz has not had much luck recently, having completed just one full racing lap in the last two Grand Prix. If Sainz is the first retirement from the race once again in Miami, it would be the first time that the same driver has been classed as the first retiree at three consecutive Grand Prix since Pedro Diniz at the last three races of the 1998 season. Jackie Oliver is the only other driver to achieve this unenviable feat. Oliver actually did it twice, in both 1969 and 1973. And finally, Mercedes have won all of the last six races at brand new venues. If the team does not win this weekend, it would be the first time since the 2012 United States Grand Prix that a team other than Mercedes have won the first race on a brand new circuit. Meanwhile, if Lewis Hamilton doesn't win this weekend, it would be the first time since Nico Rosberg's victory in Baku in 2016 that a driver other than Hamilton has won the first race at a new venue.
Nice one, Nicky. You can, of course, follow him across the race weekends. At Lights Out is where you can find all his stats and facts. Brilliant, as always. So, brand new track, so it's all very unknown. We won't really know what the teams are looking like until the first practice session, but you've got to say it's going to be between the Ferraris and the Red Bulls again. I feel like Verstappen's on a bit of a run at the moment, and I think you can't discourage either Verstappen or Leclerc for pole and a win between those two as well. I'm going to say Verstappen for pole and Verstappen for a win, though. I just feel like Red Bull are on it at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just looking. Apparently, Mercedes are bringing updates to Miami this weekend. So if they work, you never know. They could be right up there and in the mix. And again, they'll be testing those new upgrades like mad on the first two practice sessions just to see what they can get out of the car. I mean, if they can sort out their porpoising, we know their power unit's a bit down on top speed as well, but if they can sort out the porpoising, at least it puts them in the mix up there with the Red Bulls and the Ferraris. Many people have said that the circuit is a bit like the Jeddah circuit because it's like a fast street circuit. And we know that Red Bull were faster at Jeddah, though Ferrari were much quicker when it came to Melbourne, both sort of similar circuits. So I think it's going to come down to the slow speed corners. Anthony Davidson's been talking about it. He said the cars which perform the best around the slow speed corners on this circuit will have the chance to take an advantage, because most of the cars will be fast on the straights. 19 corners on this one. I think you're right. You know, I think it's going to be between the Red Bulls and the Ferraris, as it often is in the early part of 2022. I just think it could be really interesting if Hamilton gets a car that he can feel comfortable with, and George Russell, you know, has the same, then they could be right up there in the mix this weekend. I would never write off Mercedes, because, as we've said many times before, if they can fix it, bang, they're off to the races. And, you know, it could be a complete turnaround this weekend. Part of me hopes that that's the case, because it would be nice to see not just two teams, but three or maybe even four teams fighting right up there at the top. And don't rule out Haas. You know, they're racing on home soil this weekend. They've done really well with Kevin Magnussen so far this season. Mick Schumacher needs to improve a little bit. Apparently, they've got loads of sponsors lined up for this weekend as well, because they're on American soil. So it's going to be a really interesting race at a brand new circuit. And I, for one, can't wait.
Yeah, we'll be back next week to review it and tell you what we thought of the first ever Miami Grand Prix. Enjoy the race. We'll see you next week.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.